When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, how you doing?
Jared Payton.
I always feel smarter when I get off the phone with you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Former NFL running back.
And Payton will hit pay dirt. Touchdown, Titans.
College football national champion.
Well, Miami has erased all doubts about the national champion.
Sports anchor for WGN.
Jared Payton, one of my favorite teammates, because he knew exactly what it was to be great. And we needed guys like him, where Walter Payton was his dad. He lived under that shadow. When it was his time to step up, he did. We had guys like Frank Gore, Clinton Portis, Najee Davenport. The list goes on and on. But Jared Payton was solid as a running back for us at UF.
You guys won a national title together.
The Jared Payton Show today.
Jared Payton with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
That put a smile on my face hearing Jonathan Vilma talk about our guy Jared Payton that way on a Bears broadcast. It was a pretty cool moment. Yeah. Spiegel and Holmes Show, Jared Payton now joining us. What's up, JP?
What's going on, fellas? That was the best part of the game for me, was when I heard Jonathan Vilma talk about myself. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. First, before we get into anything, shout out to Tanny and Shane, man. The Tanny's open, had me in the car rolling all the way to work, and then Shane is just great, so you know what time it is. What's going on, fellas?
Yeah, that was good, man. The Jonathan Vilma thing, that was the best moment of Jonathan Vilma's entire broadcast, but that's not why you called. That's not why you called. Jared, this is we're in an ugly spot. And we can go backwards and talk about that game, but a lot of us are thinking forwards on the rest of the year and forwards on the coaching search. We know you were listening and hearing that conversation that we just had about the head coach. And Lawrence asked a question about if it's a dangerous moment to look at all these examples of Bears dysfunction and let that impact your head coaching choice, perhaps a little bit too much.
I thought it was so interesting because it's the conversation that I'm having with a lot of my friends, either, you know, people that I talk to in the streets or just in those text threads. I'm scared. First off, I think for me, Speaks, I believe in what you were saying, is that when you look at this balance of what this organization needs moving forward and the kind of coach and the man that you need to be able to lead your organization, Jim Harbaugh would have been perfect, because that's that perfect balance of the offensive minded guy plus the guy that walks into your building and changes the attitude, the atmosphere, the vibe, all that right off the bat. And I know that just from people in the Chargers organization that have told me that is right off the bat, the moment he stepped in, it changed everything. I don't have anybody close to Justin Herbert, but we can just tell by how, you know, his season that he's having, it feels like there's that connection there with the quarterback. I just have a hard time because I'm on the flip side with Lawrence too, when it comes to, I don't know if I want a guy that's been a head coach before. And so as much as I'm intrigued by Ben Johnson and how he can call plays and what he would mean to Caleb and in that relationship, I don't know if he's a leader of men. And I don't think we know that. To be from the what it takes and the criteria and all the job description to be able to run a team, we don't know that yet. And that scares me. And then on the flip side, when you're talking about having a guy like Vrabel who comes in and defensive minded guy. Now you got to go hire the right offensive coordinator to be able to be here. And what you hope for is that you're going to have success there with whoever's going to be calling plays alongside Caleb. But then there's a clock on that guy too, because that's what everybody's looking for. The next offensive minded guy. So now you're talking about change over at the OC position. So what's scaring me right now is I don't know if the right guy is even out there right now. That's what's scaring me.
See, this is part of the reason that I brought this up, because I think that all of us, like if we turn the clock back to Thanksgiving night or the morning after, we all kind of have in our mind what we're looking for in a head coach. And then you see like the press conference happening. You're like, well, that wasn't great. The fact that they let him do the Zoom, like that wasn't great. And you go, man, I was talking with someone earlier today about all of the things that the Bears need. And when you start looking down the grocery list of things that they need, you go, Ryan Poles or whomever is the GM has a big, big job ahead of them. And you're like, can someone come in here and just get this thing to function? But I also, like, I want them to try and find the best candidate.
Yeah, I think the best candidate is, you know, Jarrett, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I ran down some human characteristics that I want from that person. An authentic person, a direct communicator, somebody who's confident but isn't and doesn't worry about being liked. You know, somebody who's smart, can handle all the spinning plates, and who's curious, a strong leader. I think in the end, that stuff matters more than what side of the ball that they're on. I just think it does. It has to.
No, I'm with you, Speaks. I mean, I'm with you, Speaks. We've seen this story before. Like we've lived this before of guys that come in that haven't been head coaches in the NFL and it hasn't worked. And it probably has to deal with figuring out the structure above and how the dynamics is going to work above. And that is above the head coach. That's the GM. That's the president. And that is ownership. They got to figure that out first. Like, how do they figure out how that structure is going to go? Because it doesn't seem like that's fixed yet. And if that's not fixed, everything underneath it is not going to be fixed. We're going to be in the same situation we were before. And I think that's what was so disheartening of looking at Ryan Poles on that stage at Hallis Hall that day, is because he looked defeated to me. And I'm like, bro, this ain't how it's supposed to be.
No, because he was the man, Jared. He was the man, and now he knows he's not the man. Do you think these last four games should have any bearing? Like, the way this team shows up, should it have any bearing on Ryan Poles' job security?
I mean, I think that it's going to have some type of connection. He's going to be married to it just because he's still the GM. So at some point, if they don't win a game, the rest of this season, I don't know how he just brushes that off. I don't see how you can. I don't see how you can. And you're all this, man, we could have. I'm so frustrated right now, you guys. I'm so frustrated because it didn't have to be like this. The fact is before this season, there should have been a change that was made and to move on from Matt Eberflus and be in the right, kind of moving in the right direction with Kevin Warren, everything moving in the right direction. And now everything just seems off kilter. And I don't know how you get it back on track. And whoever you hire as head coach, how do they feel about that situation that Ryan Poles is in right now? And like, do they have somebody in mind? It all seems like we're in a murky place. And so the fact is that a lot of Bears fans, like Lawrence, you were saying right after that game on Thanksgiving. You know, I went right to my phone, and I don't do right after the game reactions, but I was so upset that I had to, and thinking like, oh yeah, you know, like this is unforgivable for Matt Eberflus, and that now Matt Eberflus is gone. But it still jumps out to me that there's still more problems to be fixed. Like Matt Eberflus wasn't the only problem. He wasn't the only problem. He might have been a big problem, but he wasn't the only problem. So let's not just get like blindsided by that. There's still things that have to be fixed for them to get this thing back on track. And I know it starts with finding a head coach, but I don't know who that is, man. I'm listening to you guys. It really like hit me like, is that right guy out there? Be able to fix everything that needs to be fixed.
I think the guy's out there, Lawrence.
It may be the fact of what you guys were talking about with Bill Belichick of how he wanted to come in and have all that control. Maybe that's what they needed, but I can understand them being weary of that because they've never done that before.
See,
this organization hasn't done that before.
I'm optimistic that the right guy is out there. I think that there are so many qualified candidates from all over that my hope is that they cast a really wide net and don't limit themselves in looking into other areas that they might end up finding the right guy. But that's the problem. I'm pessimistic that even if the right candidates are available, which I believe there are plenty, they will choose the wrong one for the wrong reason.
I mean, I can't fault you for that. And I think Bears fans, that's the sentiment that I get all the time of having the conversations with people, is they don't think that they'll get it right. But this is, you have to get this right. Like you have to get this right. Thinking about where we were going into this season, and just the promise and all of the hype and just like, I mean, I went in, man, head in the Kool-Aid, drinking, no straw, just straight like, yeah, this is it. This is it. We are here. And then people coming at me like, whoa, 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 slow down. I'm like, no, I'm not slowing down. This is it. We here now. But also knowing in the back of my head that there were some issues of all the great looking, shiny new toys on offense, but an offensive line that still was not solidified. Like, I needed to be real with myself. And I said this, I don't know what show it was, probably at Mullion Hall. But, like, I'm sorry to Bears fans that I, like, wasn't honest and true because I was really drinking the Kool-Aid, man. 10 wins. When in my heart I was like, nah, I don't think so. But I went anyway because of what I was being told by Ryan Poles and listening to these guys and these press conferences and guys talking about, hey, first, it's going to be, who's going to be the first to 1,000 yards? Whoever it is got to, you know, get this money. And I'm like, I'm just hoping to get guys to get completions every single game. Like, I'm not even worried about getting 1,000 yards. Can we get an offense going early on in a game in the first half of a football game?
There's something special when Jarrett Payton uses the phrase drinking the Kool-Aid because it's become such commonplace. But, like, when I heard it popularized was North and Jiggets, occasionally with your dad on the show. you know, and it's my favorite allusion to a mass suicide from a cult leader that is in the sports lexicon. It's quite something. But Jarrett, have you ever been on a team that had a month or more to go and you knew it was over? Like, I'm worried about this Bears effort the rest of the way. And I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm just wondering, like, if you can relate to where these guys are right now and where it could potentially be.
Not this bad. Like, I'm not on this crazy losing streak like this. I mean, it was probably that year that I was in Tennessee was probably the roughest time that I ever had on a team. But I was coming from, you know, I lost 8 games and 5 years at the University of Miami. So I didn't really know much about the losing. So it's crazy to hear you guys talk or how you guys were talking about Caleb and how he just kind of looked a little defeated. But I do want to say something about him in this situation is because going into the draft process and then after the draft process, a lot of people questioned him. And that, well, could he, if it got bad and things were bad here, which we all knew was a possibility because it's the NFL and it's sports, could he handle the media of Chicago, and would he, you know, how he would react? Hats off to that young man, because it hasn't been easy. He's had an up and down season, which I kind of thought he was going to have, but he's stepped up to the plate, and he's been up there at the podium, and he speaks, and it's not going well right now. And he's still up there. And even though he looks a little defeated, he's tired. I can understand that, but he hasn't like closed himself off. And that's what a lot of people were saying that he was going to do. He can't handle the pressure. He's handled it. And I'm hoping that throughout this process of this year of struggles that this young man's gone through, the different coordinators, a coach going, no offensive line, being sacked as much as he has, that he'll grow from these moments. And so I just want to give him credit for, you know, not be going up into a shell and stepping back, but actually taking this thing heads on here in one of the biggest markets in the country.
JP, what do you think of Bill Belichick taking the North Carolina job?
Lawrence, I heard it last night, and I literally was like, I was listening to people talk about what he's trying to build, and I called the University of Miami just to see if I had any eligibility left, because I'll go play right now for him. Like, if he's trying to, what the system that he's trying to build and what he can do there, and now in this day and age with, you know, NIL and what kids are looking for to get to the next level, if he can build that in Chapel Hill, like he can do something where it's pretty special. I think I'm more fascinated by how he deals with the young men, and what, you know, all these guys want to be like talk to like they're the best, and walk into their house and talk about, oh, you're the best thing.
And he's not doing that.
He's not doing that. But I want to see, does he change? Is he more like Dion, where he's like, yo, I'm easy to find. Like, come here. I'm here. Where he has other people doing that. Is he going to be on the road, traveling, doing all that stuff? And then also too, just about like, how is he going to be doing like some of the hip stuff with like the, you know, like some of the social media stuff? Like, is he going to get entrenched in this? Football wise, I think he's brilliant. You know what I'm talking about?
Of course I do. I don't know. There's a secret about Belichick, and that it's been exposed a little bit this year in media, that he's fun. You know, like I saw Ryan Clark saying on Inside the NFL, he said the worst thing I've had to do this year is tell all my former Steelers teammates that Bill Belichick's a good dude. So yes, I hate this. Is. I hate that I've had to do this.
He is amazing. Okay. I was so nervous. This was the Super Bowl in New Orleans. So that was Ravens and 49ers. When the lights went out, I remember we were back behind somewhere. There was when they had the commissioner's press conference, and he was back in the area. That's when we used to do the man of the year stuff and on the stage after the commissioner, and like, it's all that changed now, but he was backstage and we were all chilling, and this young man was sitting there and he had a boot on his leg, and like Bill walked up to him, and the young man was close by me, and he looked at him and goes, "What'd you do?" And the kid like just looked at him, and I got scared. I'm like, oh man. And then he said something, and Bill just laughed and then started having conversation with this young man and myself. And that was the same thing. I'm like, this dude is super, super cool, man. This is not the mute guy on the podium that just wants to give you one word answers. Like, he was sitting there talking, and his intellectually, when it comes to football, he is like an encyclopedia. He knows every genre, every single year. And I was just thinking, my dad was the exact same way. The fact if I could get the two of those into a room together to talk about football, like my dad did with Joe Paterno when he came to my house to recruit me. Like, they didn't even recruit me. My dad sat and talked. They were talking about football from back in like the 50s and the 60s. And my dad was rattling off names, and I'm just sitting there. They talked for almost 2.5 hours.
There you go.
If I would have had a dude, unbelievable moment to see when these guys love the game of football.
Those are the kind of players whose families are going to make sure they go to play for Bill. That's one thing. And he's going to do what Pat Riley did in Miami. He's going to put his rings in a plastic bag and throw them on the table and be like, would you like to come learn how to get these? because I'm your boy.
How to be a pro.
Yep.
Yeah, how to be a pro. And if you want to be one of the best and you want to, guys don't have to go to the fact that Travis Hunter, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Went to Jackson State, my dad's alma mater, to follow Dion. I mean, you couldn't even think of that back in the day. But now it's, if you're a good player, they will find you. And so he's going to be able to get those young men that have the dreams and aspirations to get to the next level. And Bill has the connections. That's why I think he has the opportunity to be able to change the college football landscape in that sense.
JP, as always, we appreciate you. Talk to you soon.
Hey, have a good one, guys. Take care.
That's Jared Payton from Channel 9. You should check him out over there at Channel 9. His Super Bowl stuff is coming up, man. He always puts together a great show talking to all sorts of people from around the NFL.
He's on the field before the Super Bowl every year giving out the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. It's like he's hobnobbing with the football glitterati every single year. But like the rest of us, sometimes he's on a Zoom in front of a Chase Bank and the Jewels.
You're damn right.
Yeah.
Hey, he's doing what he has to do.
That's where you got
to
be.
Which is great. Let's talk about Bill Belichick a little bit more in the context of what Deion Sanders has done. And I'm going to try to work through a rubric again. We'll use that word again.
Whether or not
it's worth it. Because I think it probably is, and I'll explain why next here on The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
How would your experience be without Coach Prime in your life?
I think I asked him this question like 2 months ago.
Okay.
I said, what would we be if I didn't decide to go there? And I still don't know the answer because it's hard. When I first talked to him, it's like, I don't care who he is, I don't want to go there. But as I talked to him more, it's like, oh, this might be the place I want to go. You know, he's more than just a coach, he's a father.
Travis Hunter, who's going to win the Heisman Trophy this weekend as college football's best player, him talking about Deion Sanders and going with Deion Sanders to Colorado, I do think that first part of it is interesting. Like, I don't care who he is. So I do wonder, as far as like impact on young students, whether or not that's going to be a thing with Bill Belichick.
Well, that's the whole idea, I think. Is that, I mean, look, college football has always lived somewhat on the cult of personality of the head coach.
Shout out to CM Punk.
Shout out to Living Color.
Obviously.
And Vernon Reed.
Obviously.
But the, But this new paradigm that exists is even more about that cult of personality, and it's tenuous. It feels dangerous because of the availability of the transfer portal. Like, you can turn things around crazy quick, but they can also fall apart crazy quick. Like, this whole Belichick thing, I keep thinking about, what kind of stamina does he actually have for this? What kind of stamina will he actually have for what this takes? Because as we know,
it's very different.
And in this particular era, you got to recruit to get him there. And then when the year's over, you're going to have to recruit some of them again.
Yep.
And you're going to be like, I already got you here. You're here. I already signed you with my NIL deal. My GM, Mike Lombardi, already signed. It's just a ridiculous
thing. And there might be another better deal out for that player with another NIL collective someplace else.
You're going to sell them again, or you're going to be busy trying to think about what you can do with the wing T formation?
Or Bill Belichick could also try to press upon young people that he's going to develop them so it's okay that they're not playing this year. Mm-hmm. And that young person might be like, cool, but Kenny Dillingham over at Arizona State is going to play me right now.
Right, and Bill could be like, you know what, if you can't play for me, if you can't handle it, then you can just move on. I'll just go get somebody else. And then the somebody else you get, it's not that good. It's nothing good. And you can run out of people that you could get.
I'm curious on how all of this is going to work. It's going to be a fascinating case study, and we do have one case study in front of us already, which I think is pretty great. And that's what's happened with Deion in Boulder with Colorado. And you might say, well, all right, they didn't make the playoffs this year. Well, they finished fourth in the Big 12 this season. And remember, they're, 2 years removed from being a one-win university. And now you see them be, you know, end up with, 9 wins in the season?
Yeah.
That's a success, a major success. That's just it. Then you have the number one pick in the draft and probably another top 5 pick who's going to win the Heisman Trophy. That's a major success on the field.
Colin Shador, the number one pick.
I think he's the consensus right now, number one pick. There's still all sorts of stuff to do, but I imagine Shador will be the number one pick in this year's draft.
So what defines success?
That's a great question.
Because we're 2 years here for Deion. He's brought in, I think, 100 transfers. So 100 different players have transferred in. And you have accomplished what you've accomplished in terms of raising the profile of the school, and everybody's talking about it.
And so that we're clear, Colorado is an excellent university. Like, it's a great school on top of everything else that's around it. So, yeah, they raise the profile of it. And I think that when you start to ask, like, what the question of success?
Is it success from a football competition standpoint? Or if you're the board of trustees, has it been a good investment?
I think so. They saw a 20% raise in applications.
Well, there you go.
To the university. They also saw that it opened up some elements from a diverse standpoint that they hadn't. They saw a raise in black and brown students wanting to come to Colorado. And a lot of people are calling it the prime effect. Now, that's not a huge number, but to see a 3% jump, which is what they've seen in that regard, is pretty big. If you look at what Colorado has gained, I don't know that they're paying Deion Sanders enough for what it is he has done for them in these last 2 seasons. And there have been some bumpy moments. There, he hasn't always been great at a lot of stuff, but I think it's a win on the football side and on the university side.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you talk about the negatives, it's like whether it's firing at media and doing that, or firing off messages to kids who might transfer out.
Yeah, I didn't think that was great.
Me neither. I thought showing some ugliness there. I'm sure there's been moments where some people on that board or some people in charge of Colorado are like, well, that's not exactly the personality we want to show. But it's been super fun and interesting. And whenever I've seen them on my TV, I watched that Kansas game. That was a good game a couple of weeks back. Whenever I run across them, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to see Shador. I want to see Travis Hunter. And I want to see that prime effect. I wonder what it's like there in 2 years. But this is the nature of college football now, is that it's so, it's going to be more transient. It's going to be more transient than it ever has been, and more year to year and piecemeal. And that's why it freaks some people out for sure.
Part of the reason that I'm interested in this from the Carolina standpoint is that Carolina already has a high profile. It is an excellent university that has...
It's a beautiful place.
It's in a beautiful place. It's in a Power 5 conference. It has a long and storied athletic history to it. Does Bill Belichick being there, does it raise the profile enough that it will matter? Because North Carolina is a school that is really selective about letting students in. So will they, and I'm not saying that Colorado isn't, because Colorado also an excellent university.
I think North Carolina will bend for Bill Belichick. They've probably bent for Roy Williams a little bit.
No. You're misunderstanding. I'm not talking about getting people on the football team. I'm talking about
getting people into the university. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, I got you.
UNC will get a flood, I think, of people that are interested in going there, but will they even be qualified?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the football stuff matters. My alma mater, Alabama, has seen a huge jump during the Saban era, a huge jump of people in the Chicago area. Like, you'll be riding around, you see a lot of bumper stickers and a lot of Roll Tide. Kids from here have figured out that Tuscaloosa is really not that far from here.
I think it's just the Lawrence Holmes effect.
It's definitely not my effect, but a 90-minute flight and a 40-minute drive from Birmingham is all it takes to get to Tuscaloosa. So they've seen an increase in places where ordinarily the mm-hmm. University of Alabama wouldn't be able to draw high school students away. Mm-hmm. But now they're in a place like Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. And there, it's a whole new thing. What does Bill Belichick open up for UNC? I don't know, but I think that overall, there's the possibility of it turning out similarly, if not the same, as what the effect is. The winning has to happen, though. Like, because there were already people that were waiting on Deion to fail in this second season. And then the winning started to happen. Guys going into the NFL, big stars flipping commitments.
Mm-hmm.
All of that stuff has to happen for Bill. I don't know if he's, what's the right word? I don't know if he's as ready to be the carnival barker and the salesman.
No, I think he assumes he doesn't have to be, don't you?
That Deion is willing to be. Like, Deion has really been up there being like, come to Colorado. I thought that one of the things that he said about Boulder was really beautiful. Have you ever been to Boulder?
No, I haven't yet.
It's a gorgeous place. I honestly don't know how, when a kid goes there, how they don't end up going to that university.
I've been to Boulder. It's insane.
It's beautiful.
Insane. And they have the coldest beer in the world there at the Coors Light, Coors Light Brewery.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they get it to 0.2 degrees above freezing.
Oh.
It's insane.
Okay, it's something to think about when I go back to Boulder. But that, he said, I spent most of my life in the Southeast. I spent most of my life in Florida. I really didn't know that a place like this existed. And he said that's now part of his recruiting pitch, is that when he's talking to these kids out of Miami Southwest and, you know, all of this stuff, that he goes, no, you need to come out here and see what it's like mm-hmm. in Boulder. And it's changed. I was in Boulder last year, Speaks, and seeing the people of Boulder be behind Deion, not the university, but be behind Deion, has been an amazing transformation.
That's pretty cool. Hey, we are throwing ourselves a holiday party tomorrow because the company threw one during our show yesterday, and we'd like to attend one. So we're having one tomorrow on this show, tomorrow between 2 and 6. If you, dear listener, would like to participate in our Spiegel & Holmes holiday party tomorrow, you can. Head over to the Odyssey app right now and click send a voice message next to the Listen Live button, okay? And you can contribute a grievance you've had with your favorite Chicago sports team or athlete this season. A grievance is what you'll contribute. We will play the best ones on tomorrow's show. So we'll have our little Festivus portion of the holiday party tomorrow. Contribute your grievance next to the Listen Live button with the Send a Voice Message button. And in addition to our regular Bears Friday guests, tomorrow we'll have Chicago legend John Vincent here singing some of our favorite holiday songs. And we will have a very special gift for you, the dedicated Score listener, at 5:30 tomorrow on the holiday show. So tune in tomorrow and head over to the Odyssey app and send a voice message to contribute a grievance.
Categories is next here on the Score.
So I think it's time to play the game.
We're playing the game?
Yes, we're playing the game.
Do we have to play the game?
What's the game?
Oh, everybody knows what the game is. The game is called Categories. You listen to the show, then you know stuff that's in the sports news, things we've talked about. One of us turns them into three categories. New rule. It can be whatever you want. Three non-sports, three sports, whatever. The host decides. This week, the host is Shane Reardon. What you got, sir?
And to be fair, we made that rule after I chose these categories. I would have done three non-sports because, in my opinion, sports are ass. But I have two sports, one non-sports.
Oh, I like that. Let's get it.
Your first category. I need every Bears offensive coordinator dating back to 1970 when they started defining the job.
Wow.
Every Bears offensive coordinator with the introduction of the newest one back to 1970.
All right, who starts?
Lawrence, you are first.
Thomas Brown.
Okay.
I'll go Shane Waldron.
Okay.
Dow Loggins.
Okay.
Dow Loggins, I think, just got a head coaching job somewhere.
On a peewee football team?
Yeah, I think a college team.
Wow. All right.
Lawrence?
Oh, I'm back up. John Shoup.
Yep.
Terry Shea.
Yep, right after John Shoup. Went 5-11 that year. The only year he was OC.
Friend of the show, Mike Martz.
Correct.
Ron Turner.
That is correct.
I'll go with Mark Helfrich.
That is correct.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
good
him.
Good one.
Thank you.
Mark Helfrich went 20-12 as the OC.
He enjoyed kicking Pat Manley out of rooms. Did Mike Tice do the job for a little bit?
He did in 2012, yeah. 10-6 that year.
Go back.
All right, I surrender. I'm out.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is getting hot. This is getting tough.
You're missing very clear ones.
How about Bill Lazor?
That's correct.
Ooh, pew, pew, the Lazor show.
14-19 as OC was Bill Lazor.
Again, these guys have a lot of, like, funny things. I get very emotional when I talk about this guy in front of the room. Yeah. Aaron Cromer.
Yeah. 13-19 is OC.
Thank you for that
Cromer.
Emotional apology.
Speaks.
I'll go with Luke Getsy.
That is correct. 10-24 was Luke Getsy as OC.
You always hear this name, but I don't remember if he's offense or defense. I'll take a shot. Gary Croton.
Oh, Gary Croton, 1999 and 2000.
Yeah.
11-21.
I could be in trouble now.
You're still missing one modern day OC.
Just one modern day OC. How about Adam Gase?
That's correct. 2015, Adam Gase.
Right. Thank you for the modern day clue.
Completely out of the game now.
And now, Tanny, we go all the way back to 97 and earlier.
Good luck,
yeah,
Tanny.
That's a tough call. I mean, yeah. I got nothing except it was Matt Nagy.
Yeah, was he his own OC?
No, he was not.
He should have been.
Yeah.
Speaks, you got one?
I do not.
Well, no, he already won. Yeah.
Okay. Matt Kavanaugh, Greg Landry, Ed Hughes. Ted Marchabrota, Ken Meyer, Sid Gilman, and the first ever defined OC for the Bears, Perry Moss.
I should have gotten Kavanaugh, who was a guest on the Score with at the same time that who's it? Greg Blosh was the defensive coordinator. Greg Blasche.
Category number two. Got to move a little bit here. With the signing of Juan Soto by the Mets, a very lucrative deal for Juan Soto. I need the top 20 ever White Sox free agent contracts.
God. Oh my God. White Sox free agent contracts.
That's important. Not extensions. White Sox free agent contracts.
All right, I go first, right?
Yes.
Andrew Benintendi.
Well, I guess extensions apply. Yes, Andrew Benintendi.
Oh, extensions do apply.
I think so.
Some restrictions
may apply. No, they
also.
Do. They do.
Okay.
They do. But a player to reach free agency and then sign a new deal.
Okay. Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah, it's correct. Tanny?
Yasmani Grandal.
Correct. 4 years, $73 million.
Oh.
You guys got one and two so far.
I mean, they're not like a ton of them.
No, it's true.
So I surrender. I give up.
All right, I go Dallas Keuchel.
That's correct. 3 years, $55.5 million.
Jose Abreu.
Yep. 8 years, $68 million. 6 years, $68 million.
Oh, geez.
You got one, two, three, and six.
One, two, three, and six. Albert Bell on this list?
Albert Bell is on the list. He is number seven. Five years, $55 million.
Melky Cabrera?
Melky Cabrera is on the list. 3 years, $42 million as number 10.
All right, so if we're down to that, how about Liam Hendricks?
Liam Hendricks, number eight. 4 years, $54 million. Friend of the show. You're missing a friend of the show.
Oh, don't throw me like that. I've already got my mind set on when they won the offseason. Jeff Samard. No, that was a trade. David Robertson?
David Robertson, that's the friend of the show. 4 years, $46 million.
Did you grab a bat, Samardzija?
David Robertson. Wow. All right, so how...
I was born in it.
Yeah. How about Kendall Graveman?
Kendall Graveman, 3 years, $24 million as number 14.
That is incredible. The 14th
richest contract, free agency contract in White Sox history is $24 million.
That's a great category.
So you said extensions count?
Yeah,
a player to hit free agency and then extended. So like one guy's on this list a couple times. That should give you a good hint.
You know what? I'll just say I'm going to go along the line with the Kendall Graveman train of thought. Is Scott Linebrink on
this list?
Scott
Linebrink, 4 years, $19 million.
Oh, man. That was a big-time commitment.
The 16th richest contract in White Sox history.
One of the saddest categories of all time.
We're just having fun.
Oh, yeah, we are. God, I guess so. So is Paul Konerko on the list?
Paul Konerko is on the list twice. 5 years, $60 million, and 3 years, $37.5 million.
He at least earned it.
Another guy earned it. I hope he's on the list. Mark Burley?
I don't
know. No. But I think he was always an extension guy.
I guess so.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Mark Burley, not on the list.
Yeah,
free agent. So do I need another one here?
Yeah, you need a lot more.
Well, no, Lawrence is out, and Tanny just missed it, right?
Oh, yeah, my bad. Yeah, there's nine more.
Joe Kelly's not on the list, is
he? Yes, he is. 2 years, $17 million. He is the 18th richest contract in White Sox history. So we missed Adam Dunn.
No, can I just throw one in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is Jeff Kepinger on the list?
He is not.
But the fact that all those bad relievers that are on the list.
Yeah, so you missed Kelvin Herrera, Jamie Navarro, Frank Thomas, Adam LaRoche, Adam Dunn, Larry Garcia.
They let Frank Thomas hit free agency.
Yeah. Eric Fetty and Wellington Castillo.
Oh, wow.
From number one down to 20, we go from $75 million down to 15.
That's an incredible list.
All right, we're going to be late here. We'll do a midday show clock and just go however long we want. So the third category is non-sports, and it is my favorite 50 Christmas movies of all time.
Your favorite?
I'm kidding. It's okay. The top 50 grossing Christmas movies of all time.
Oh, hell yeah. Tanny's first. Christmas movies top grossing of all time.
Top grossing of all time.
Home Alone.
Home Alone is on there, yes. Number two.
Die Hard.
Not a Christmas movie. You're out.
Damn it.
How about It's a Wonderful Life?
It's a Wonderful Life. I probably should have done this digitally so I could just search them, huh?
Oh. Movies were a penny back then.
Oh, yeah. Right?
So.
Yeah, yeah. So
Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
I was thinking about it wrong.
Die Hard is on there. I'm sorry.
Oh, Die Hard is
on there. Really?
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry. I missed that. Yeah, Die Hard's
right.
on there. Die Hard
back,
1
baby.
And 2, so I'm just going to take them both out.
All right.
It's a Wonderful Life, not on there.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, whoops. Okay.
So is it me now? Or?
Yeah, because I'm out, right? I guess.
Yeah, you're out. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Get him out.
I did win the other two categories, so I win the game, but that's okay. Go ahead.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yes, that is on there. That is number 38.
The Santa Claus movies.
The Santa
yes.
Claus.
Tim Allen, yes.
Yeah, they're all on there.
A Christmas Story.
Christmas Story is...
Movies were a dime at that point. Not a penny, but
it's only 1983.
Yeah, it's on there.
Okay.
Miracle on 34th Street?
Yep, number 46.
Wow, barely. Wait.
46,264,384.
And it's a Wonderful Life.
It's been on TV for free every year for, you know, entirety.
Yeah. How is that?
I just saw a wonderful production of this week. Elf?
Yeah, number 11.
Sorry, you saw Elf Jr. That doesn't quite count.
True, yeah. 225 million.
Stole my next guess.
Christmas with the Cranks?
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, number 31, 96 million.
Lawrence is rolling now.
Home Alone 2. Electric Boogaloo.
Thank you for that. Every sequel is Electric Boogaloo for all eternity.
Dude, I don't think Home Alone 2 is on here.
What?
Oh, yeah, it is. It's number four. I'm sorry.
It's number four.
Number four. Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, featuring President Donald Trump.
That's right.
That's true. Played a big role in that movie. Kind of helped, right?
Like, oh, God.
I think he helped. I'm not sure. I'm out.
Ooh.
Teddy, need one more.
Polar Express.
Polar Express.
That's great call.
Is...
got to be on there.
Yeah, number seven.
All right, Tom Hanks. Never a doubt.
315 million.
Finally, I've won a category.
Good work, Tanny.
Way to go, Tanny. And that is categories. Great job, Shane. Love the two topics or three topics. That was outstanding stuff.
And who won?
Well, Tanny just won that last one.
Right. Wasn't that great? It was the feel-good category of the year.
You know, Lawrence, I mean, how dare you think I'm being selfish? The answer to who won is, of course,
the listener.
The listener.
Mark Grody has got a Bears hit for us. One word. Next on The Score.